Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Getting Florio, writing any articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. You see him on NBC Sports, and you read his stuff at ProFootballTalk.com. There's something really weird that's happening, tangential to the Kyler Murray declaration. And because of statements, Mike, that have already been made by Cliff Kingsbury, who I keep having to remind myself is the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, and of what he said about Kyler Murray, it's forced the Cardinals to now have to go out of their way to tell us again how much they love Josh Rosen. It all seems very forced and very strange.
And it's also very necessary. Here's why. Even though it would be wise for the Cardinals to consider all options with the first overall pick, including Kyler Murray, if Kingsbury wasn't just simply puffing up an opponent, but truly meant that he would take Murray with the first overall pick in the draft weeks before anyone realized he would be coaching the team that had the first pick in the draft, they need to avoid undermining Josh Rosen. And this is a key aspect of ensuring that your quarterback is viewed within and without the organization as the guy. You don't need and you can't have teammates for the next 2.5 months thinking maybe they're really not committed to Josh Rosen. You can't have that lingering beyond the draft. You need to nip it in the bud now. It needs to be something that they say, we are not doing. Josh is our guy. Now, if circumstances should change between now and the end of April and they decide to draft Kyler Murray, they'll cross that bridge when they come to it. But they can't afford to let this linger, and they can't afford to have this feeling exist after the draft if they don't take Murray, because then it becomes a narrative. They're waiting for the next guy. They're waiting for the next opportunity to move on from Josh Rosen. So they have to fully commit to him while he's there. And we've seen this with other teams. They are completely and totally and unequivocally and unconditionally behind a guy until the moment they no longer are, and then they act like they never were.
Would there be a trade market for a guy taken in the first round like Rosen was? Is there a precedent for that?
Well, back in 1989, my God, it's been 30 years. Remember, the Cowboys took Troy Aikman with the first overall pick in the regular draft, yeah. And then they used a first-round pick on Steve Walsh in the supplemental draft. And they flipped him the next year to the Saints and got more than what they gave up to get Steve Walsh. Remember, Troy Aikman was upset, and I think it's the Jeff Perlman book, Boys Will Be Boys, that gets into the details of just the tension between Aikman and Jimmy Johnson because of the fact that they drafted Steve Walsh. But that's why it's such a sensitive thing. The quarterback is the leader of the team, and he can't feel like he's being undermined. So if you are thinking Kyler Murray, you can't say it until you do it. And then you do it, and you figure out what you're going to do with Josh Rosen on the back end.
Kyler Murray's agent says that his client weighs 205 pounds. That's like my agent saying that I'm an airplane. I mean, come on. There's no way.
Well, and here's the thing. We're going to find out the truth in 2 weeks in Indianapolis, and he's going to look silly if Kyler Murray is under 200. I think I would set the over-under at 200, but I was with the guy 12 days ago in Atlanta. Okay. 2 hours after we sat with Russell Wilson, I'm bigger than Kyler Murray, and I weigh 185. Now, I understand muscle weighs more than flab, so there's a chance that what's on his frame weighs more than what's on my frame. But he does not look like a guy who weighs 205. In clothes, in street clothes, he looks like a little kid. And little kids don't weigh 205. Grown men weigh 205, especially when this guy is south of 5'10". So it'll be an interesting weigh-in, to say the least. You know, we usually obsess over hand size. This year it's going to be height and weight of Kyler Murray that makes all the news when it's time to strip these guys down to their underwear and put them on the scale.
Do you have any sense from those in scouting realms or front offices that there's any apprehension about whether the A's could offer him a major league contract that would tilt things back to baseball, or is that pie in the sky?
No, I think that is something to be concerned about, and I believe that the A's have been playing this brilliantly, because as long as they're still there, As long as that bridge to baseball exists, any team that is thinking about using a first-round pick on Kyler Murray has to worry that he's not going to sign a contract. And I asked Murray point blank, are you thinking about basically taking full advantage of the leverage you have and saying, hey, look, here are the teams I want to play for, and here's the floor on where I'm going to be drafted. And if it's below that, or if it's by a team I don't want to play for, I'm just going to play baseball. And he said he's not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's one thing to say he's not going to do it. It's another thing to adhere to it. And I look at it this way. If I'm going to draft Kyler Murray, I'm calling his agent before I put his name on the card and say, if we draft this guy, can you guarantee he's going to sign a contract? And if the guy says no, or anything other than hell yes, I'm not taking him. So there is a lot of power that Murray can exercise here. He's got one thing that 99.99% of the draft picks don't, and that is a viable alternative to make good money playing a professional sport that isn't football. And that's the kind of thing that makes the NFL very uncomfortable because they're used to dictating terms to these kids. I mean, they have these kids brainwashed to think it's an honor to be drafted by a team and forced to live in a city you don't want to live in and play for a team you may not want to play for. So they don't like anyone who can turn the tables on the NFL and say, this is how I'm going to do it. And it'd be really be the first time since Eli Manning, who was the first one since John Elway. And if Kyler Murray wants to try to do that, he can, and it may just happen naturally because, again, I'm not drafting him unless I get a hell yes from Eric Burkhart that Murray's going to sign a contract.
A little breaking news here, Mike. This is a tweet from Adam Schefter, and, yeah, there is a blue check mark here. It says, Baltimore has an agreement in principle to trade Joe Flacco to the Broncos. The trade cannot be processed until the NFL league year begins Wednesday, March 13th. Teams prohibited from commenting on deal or terms surrounding it. Didn't see that coming.
Well, and remember the game, the playoff game several years ago when Joe Flacco and the Ravens came back late and threw the deep ball to Jacoby Jones and
yes.
forced the win in double overtime. And here's the thing. You know, Case Keenum was worried about the Broncos drafting a quarterback. Oops. Now Case Keenum is the odd man out. So that's the next domino to fall. Where does Case Keenum go? And I would keep an eye on the New York Giants because Pat Shurmur, Case Keenum, I know they say that Eli Manning is their guy, but look at what Keenum and Shurmur did together in Minnesota in 2017.
Would another domino not be Nick Foles in that whole equation?
Well, yeah, that's right. But you know, who knows what the Eagles are going to do when it comes to Foles. There's been talk about using the franchise tag to trade him because they want to make sure he doesn't show up in New York, doesn't show up in Washington, doesn't show up in the division. I think Jacksonville makes sense. And back when the Jaguars hired John DeFilippo to be the offensive coordinator, he was the quarterback's coach for the Eagles the year that they won the Super Bowl with Foles winning the MVP. They asked Doug Marrone about whether hiring DeFilippo means that they're going to have interest in Nick. And Marrone tried his best to put on the poker face. He was like, Nick who? Who's Nick? Nick? I don't know any Nick. Nick? I don't know Nick. And of course, he can't talk about Nick Foles. It was a bad question because it leads the coach into a potential tampering situation. But I think the Jaguars are going to be the team at the front of the line trying to get Nick Foles.
Wow, so Vic Fangio takes that job. And I'm trying to remember, he was with the Ravens when Flacco was there, right? So I think there's some sort of institutional knowledge there between head coach and quarterback. I know he may not be as involved in the offense as some, but that's, boy, there's a lot going on there, man.
Well, look, this is what, and Fangio talked about this over the weekend. The question of patience versus impatience. Trying to win now versus trying to win later. The problem is if they don't win now, everybody's getting blown out in Denver. John Elway knows, look, one more losing season. They haven't had back-to-back losing seasons since 71, 72 until 2017, 2018. They know there's an urgency to win now. And Flacco enters, Keenum undoubtedly exits, and we're off and running for the 2013 offseason.
Speaking of patience, does Antonio Brown have any?
No, I mean, look at it this way. They're trying to work out some sort of a trade. They're trying to do something subtly and privately. And Brown had been good about not stating his desires until yesterday when he cracked and tweeted basically goodbye Pittsburgh. And nothing has happened yet. He's asked for a trade and he hasn't gotten a trade. And I had Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on PFT Live earlier today, and he's covered the Steelers for 30 years. He firmly believes the Steelers should take the best offer they can get, even if it's a conditional seventh-round pick in 2020, before March 17, when $2.5 million in roster bonus comes due. We'll see what the Steelers do. Remember, they dumped Santonio Holmes for a fifth-round pick back in 2010, 2 years after he was the Super Bowl MVP. So when they're done with a guy, they're done with a guy. But it's unusual to see the guy dictating to the Steelers. Usually the Steelers do what they want to do, and they won't do what the guy wants them to do. In this case, though, I think it's in their best interest to move on from the distraction, from the drama, the dysfunction, and count on the fact that they're going to find a replacement in the draft, just like they found Antonio Brown. One of the things the Steelers don't get enough credit for, they find good receivers rounds 3 through 6 of the draft, and they need to have the confidence that they'll do it again.
What do we now know after the fact about the number of teams that expressed some interest in Kareem Hunt? How did that go down? How did he end up with the Browns?
Well, I really do think that all this talk about the Bears possibly trading Hunt forced John Dorsey, the GM of the Browns, to say, hey, I better speak now or forever hold my peace. And who knows what kind of negotiations were happening behind the scenes. It's not like they gave Kareem Hunt a ton of money to sign with the Browns, but you know, Dorsey drafted him in Kansas City just a few weeks before Dorsey was fired. He was the rushing leader for the entire NFL in 2017, and the guy's got talent. I mean, here's the bottom line. And, you know, I always laugh when I see the comments about, oh, second chance, he deserves a second chance. Like, everybody deserves a second chance. You get one if you're talented enough to earn it. If you're not talented, you ain't getting the second chance. And if Kareem Hunt was a run-of-the-mill slappy who was good for 250 yards, they'd find somebody else who doesn't bring the baggage to town. That's why Ray Rice never got another job, because he was on the downside of his career. You can find younger, cheaper guys who don't have that issue that is carrying, or that they're carrying around. Where for Hunt, he's good enough that they're willing to give it a try. And maybe at some point in 2019, he'll be on the field for the Browns. 2020, they'll have him. You put Kareem Hunt with Baker Mayfield, and it's more likely that the Browns are going to be contenders each and every year.
Mike Florio, thank you.
See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.